I try to stay away from who's saying what a little bit, because you know, it, like you said, the band, like, do I have the bandwidth? I was like so anxious, like all year. Yeah. Everything about it was just so overstimulating. Like, just, I just didn't have really any time to process it. I'm trying to graduate. I'm trying to, and graduate like with good marks, and you know, also stay in the lineup. Also make sure I'm playing the best so that I can, you know, make an impression and you know, feel like, you know, I should be here. It's like, it was a lot. And also being away from home for the first time was another thing. And so there was a lot of factors that probably didn't help with the stress levels, but I feel like I handled it the best I could.
That was London Hoylett of the Vancouver Giants, and you are listening to the Up My Hockey podcast with Jason Podolin. Just watch me now. Welcome to Up My Hockey with Jason Podolin, where we deconstruct the NHL journey, discuss what it takes to make it, and have a few laughs along the way. I'm your host, Jason Podolin, a 31st overall draft pick who played 41 NHL games, but thought he was destined for 1,000. Learn from my story and those of my guests. This is a hockey podcast about reaching your potential. Hello there, and welcome back, or welcome to the Up My Hockey podcast with Jason Podolin. I am your host, Jason Podolin, and today we are going to be speaking with London Hoylett. He is a forward for the WHL's Vancouver Giants. Just finished his 18-year-old season, his second season in the league, and I've been wanting to interview London for a while. I'm a big fan of London's. He came into my world through Instagram, sent me an Instagram message, which we cover a little bit here in the discussion. But he reached out to me when he wasn't going great. Things weren't going great for him this season. He reached out. He wanted to see if there was some way I could help and support him. And we've been working together ever since. And in the process of working with London, I've got to know him as a young man, the hockey player he is, the human he is, the leader that he is. And there's not much to not like about this young man. Super creative. He's a singer. He's a like an artist. He goes by Ty, T-Y, Kiddo. If you want to see what he's doing on Spotify or any of these other music channels, he creates videos. He's learned how to play the guitar. You know, he's obviously going to bat as a hockey player, and he's helping out in the community, and he's doing all these things that are just, I think, amazing. And I think that he's a great example of what a hockey player can be and what being a hockey player can mean. And in the process of working with him, knowing his story a little bit and knowing what he's gone through, knowing what it's been like to be with him now over the course of this season and see him not only participate in my Peak Potential Hockey Project, my mindset program for hockey players, but also working with him after the fact of that program being open and having him be a part of my inner circle, which is a group of hockey players from, you know, all ages and skill levels from all across North America, where we get together every 2 weeks and talk about mindset topics and support one another, and I provide personal coaching on that call as well. I've been able to put London in a position of, you know, leadership often, because some of these players are either wanting to play in the WHL or Junior A, and many of them are playing U18 triple, or they're younger players at U15, and London has just been a great example for them, and he's able to share his journey, you know, his downs, his accomplishments, the trade that happened this year between the Calgary Hitmen and the Vancouver Giants, and what he was, you know, the circumstances around that. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts when you get traded as a junior athlete and changing, you know, whether it be your school or your social circle or your, you know, the locker room, the teammate, the province that you're in, the country that you're in. And he was just been a great resource for everything to do with the athletes that I work with. And he's been an inspiration for me to work with. And I just thought that it'd be good to talk about his story. He's also a person of colors. London's dad was from Jamaica. His parents were descendants from Jamaica. So he is, you know, as he puts it, kind of, well, he didn't really put it that way, but a little bit of an outsider. He's a unique person in the hockey landscape, and I felt that was also a good reason to have him on. His story is awesome. He's experiencing hockey through the eyes of a minority. He is in the WHL landscape trying to be a pro. He's had to earn and work for everything that he's gotten. He's experienced challenges, difficulty that most players his age have not. Yet he's finding ways to get it done. He's finding ways to improve. And he's also been working with me, which is fun to be able to talk about. An athlete that's been working with me. And I know I do get a lot of questions about what does that look like? What do you do? How does it work? And so, you know, London at times in this conversation talks about working together and how it's helped him and how it made such a difference for him this year. And obviously that's exciting for me to share success stories as well. So I'm really excited to share this interview with you, London, and anyone surrounding London who is listening to this. You know what an all-star you have there in your circle and how fortunate you are to have London in your life. I feel that way when I have a chance to talk to London as well. I feel fortunate that he's a part of my circle. And now we're going to share London with the Up My Hockey podcast community. And I think you're going to really enjoy this young man's story. And let's help me celebrate his successes and let's get on with the conversation with London Hoilett. Well, here we are in the off season, unfortunately, but we're in the playoffs. But back home, sitting comfortably in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Welcome to the podcast, London Hoilett.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, love having you. Thanks for agreeing to do this. I would have mentioned it on the intro, but London and I have been working together for, roughly, what is it now? Is it a year and a half, kind of? Is that what it
about
is?
About a year,
right? Because you reached out in the beginning of this season before the trade. Mm-hmm. So been getting to know each other pretty well, and I thought your story, London, is super relevant and something that I think would be interesting for the podcast. And you're doing what a lot of people who follow me and a lot of the young athletes want to do. So I was like, you know what? Let's get somebody on here who's actually doing it right now. And I thought that'd be a great place to start. So maybe we can start with, since you're back in Winnipeg there, London, let's talk about minor hockey. Like, I know a lot of kids right now, we were just, for instance, with my oldest, my 2009, we did the BC Cup, right? So it's his draft year this year. And where were we going to play for his draft year? And what was the best place for him to be? And, all the decisions and questions that come up, and where did he want to be? Maybe we'll start there with you. Like, what was the draft a big thing for you at the time when you were leading into it? Was it something you were thinking about and something you were trying to position yourself for?
I think, yeah, the draft, since I was younger, because I had an older brother, and my older brother I was able to watch him and see like how like his friends were getting drafted and where they were all going. And so when I was younger, like way too young to even be drafted, it was always kind of a goal of mine. And so I was playing AAA. And then I think for my draft year, me and my mom, we decided to go to Rink Hockey Academy. And so I went there for the first year in Bantam and had a pretty good year. Draft came around, name was not called. So that was a pretty disappointing moment in time, but I'm actually really glad that it had happened and that I kind of learned from that and realized that it doesn't mean everything, right? I mean, you can make it to the league like without a draft or without being drafted, and you know, a lot of guys that are drafted haven't played a game yet. So it's the draft is really kind of, it's not really too important to me, especially now. Even with the NHL draft now, I feel like, I'll end up where I'm supposed to be, and I'll try and make sure I can accomplish my dreams. And so that's kind of been the story of my life a little bit.
Well, there you go. I know that's something that you definitely identify with, and I think that's a great piece of you, meaning, like the guy that's going to overcome, the guy that's going to persevere, the guy that's going to continue to get better and not go anywhere. So fantastic. But I do think that that's pretty wild in the sense of, like, let's unpack that a little bit. So you did have, and mind you, I see on your elite prospects too, which I didn't even know till now. So you were a Brick Invitational player. So you played in the Brick tournament.
Yeah.
So for anyone out there who is from the States and maybe hasn't heard of this tournament, it's for first year Adams, and it's kind of a bit of a frenzy in some spots, like in that age group. Yeah. Like parents get freaked out about it, players want to play in it. It's kind of the best of the best of that age, and obviously we're talking about little kids, you know, really that end up going to it. But there are a lot of players that do play there, you know, like Connor Bedard plays there, and you see these guys that play in the Brick tournament, and you'll see their little videos, and they go on to be NHL stars. So everybody wants to be, you know, a part of that tournament. So at that age, you were obviously a pretty darn good player, right? And then you were also at the AAA level at U15. So it was something like, I always talk about expectations, and you know that, right? Like when we work together and in the calls and stuff, and expectations mean a lot. Your expectation that year in the Bantam draft was rightfully, I was going to get drafted. And you had a season where you scored 18 goals in 30 games, which isn't too shabby at all, right? So you even had some production to back that up. Talk about that, like where you were at, like the days before the draft. I'm sure you had some questionnaires or whatever was happening at the time, and then the result of it. Like, walk us through that a bit.
Yeah, it was a crazy time. I remember getting those invitations, or I guess like those questionnaires, and that kind of that kind of even hyped me up a little more, because I was like, oh, okay, so they see me. And I did all those, did every single one I got, tried my hardest, looked presentable, and I'm probably sweating through all my shirts during them. I was super nervous, and I remember just going back to like practice and all the boys talking about like what invitations they, or I guess what questionnaires they got and how many teams have they talked to. And it was just kind of a huge thing, because you know, it's an important year, you know, for that age group. And I think everybody's been waiting for that year for pretty much ever. So it was an exciting time for everybody.
What was like, was there a team that you thought was going to draft you, or did you think that you were going to go in a certain spot, or like what was it like before that day of the draft? Like what were your thoughts? What was going through your head?
I thought it could just be literally any team that gave me a questionnaire. So every time I remember watching the draft, I was at my house by myself. My mom was at work, and she let me skip class. And I remember just watching it and like, oh, this team sent me a questionnaire. Maybe this is the one. This is the one. And it just kept going, kept seeing my buddy's names pop up. I said congrats. And it was a little heartbreaking a little bit, but I remember just how heartbroken I was. And my brother and my mom were kind of also kind of trying to console me a little bit, because I was, you know, I'm young, and I don't think I saw the bigger picture really. And, you know, everybody was telling me like, the draft, you know, it isn't everything. And they were definitely right. So
right,
I think, yeah, that's kind of how that went down.
So how'd you pick yourself up? You know what I mean? So here's something that you put a lot of time in, and it does get, it gets way too businesslike too young, right? Like, you know, I don't know why the WHL picks when they do. They should give these you guys another year to mature, I think. But they do what they do, and so now you're 14 years old, or maybe just turned 15 years old, and you're you're waiting away from school in this house. You're wanting these things to happen. You feel like you got kicked in the guts. Like, what was that transition, those next few days like?
Just like trying to, how do I put this? I guess I was trying to kind of rethink the way, or like think of it in a different type of way, trying to flip it into a positive. And I kind of just let it like fuel me a lot. I think I was like, you know, I'm going to use this anger and this rage while I'm out there, and like prove to everybody that, you know, I am a good player and I deserve a chance. And I think that kind of just stuck throughout the rest of my career. And right. That's kind of just become my identity, I feel like.
I love it. Yeah, because, I mean, it can, as we've talked about numerous times, it can mean whatever you want it to mean at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. It can be a reason to go away and to not think that you can be a player, or it can be a reason that's really going to solidify you know, your identity, and that's going to be a commitment to you to get even better, right? To double down on kind of your idea of what you can do, which is really powerful. And for anyone out there listening, like, it is moments, and we talk about this lots with the guys that I work with. It's the moments, like those little moments, those micro moments, and how we, the perspective we apply to them and how we come through those moments is really the key pieces of the whole nine yards, right? Like it is the key piece. So you having that response and building that resilience and building up that character piece of, no, I'm not going anywhere, right? If anything, I'm going to be more relentless. I'm going to be more committed. I'm going to be more dedicated. That now has served you to get to where you are, right? But there's lots of kids that probably don't hear their name called and they just think, oh, it's not my day. This isn't my thing. I'm going to go whatever, right? I'm going to go do whatever now. So good on you to do that, because a dream shouldn't be stopped by something like that. And I say to anyone, like anyone, it doesn't matter. Like the draft really doesn't matter. Like the next day, either you're proving them right or either you're proving them wrong. Right. You know what exactly, I mean, it's just a snapshot. It's a moment in time when you're 14, 15 years old. It's a long way away from a finished product. But with that, so you decide to take that piece. You have your time to mull it over. You're like, okay, I'm going all in here. What did that next year or 2 years like, how did you end up on Calgary's list? Like, walk us through that piece for everyone out there who maybe not hear their name called here coming in a month.
Yeah, well, I mean, COVID kind of threw a wrench in a lot of things. I was lucky enough to be one of the players with the Rink Hockey Academy, and I think we, at that time, we were the only ones allowed to skate in all of Winnipeg. So that just knowing that kind of made me realize how like fortunate I was to even be able to be skating and maybe use this time to try and get ahead a little bit. So we were like all divided. It was crazy. Like there were three sections in the rink and you could only have like two at a time and one in the middle. And then it was a lot going on, but I remember, just still practicing throughout all of COVID that year. I think that would be U17 or mm-hmm. U16. Yeah. And pretty much I just kept working. And then we had our U18 year and we were able to go to the Max tournament. That's what it was. So we went to the Max tournament and had a really good tournament. I guess the scout had seen me there. He liked what he saw and he kind of gave me an invitation to Calgary. It was a weird time to be a high schooler, with all of COVID and stuff. But I was very fortunate to be able to stay on my skates. So I think that really helped. Yeah.
So you have a good circle. Well, I guess it's called the Circle K now, but it used to be called the Max Forever. So you have a good tournament. Obviously, there's a tons of eyeballs there. And so did you get on the list at that point, or did you just get invited to camp?
I just got invited to camp.
Okay, yeah. So you did not listed, but invited to camp. So you're an underdog again there, right? So you show up to Calgary. Is that the 22-23 season now where you showed up unlisted to camp and end up making the team?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So walk me through that training camp and what that looked like.
So going to training camp, I went with my mom. We flew there and I just remember how nervous I was. I was like, this is my shot here. This is kind of, it's do or die for me here. And I remember going there, getting into like orientation and everything and seeing everybody there. They all looked so big. Everyone looked like ready to go and like professional. And there I am just like, what am I doing here kind of thing. And I remember just kind of playing like I had nothing to lose that entire camp because I really didn't. I had nothing to lose. I was so loose, probably the loosest I've felt in a while. I remember I scored like two hat tricks, just doing stuff I just didn't know I could do. Just trying stuff, just having fun. And I remember I thought I was going to be going to Verdun because I was drafted by Verdun the year prior. So I was wearing my visor already, trying to like, I was like, okay, I'll practice this. And then when I go to Verdun, it'll be like second nature, right? So everyone was excited to have a visor. So I put mine on. I remember going to Calgary and I was the only guy not like drafted by them, like with a visor on. And so everyone was like, why does this guy have a visor on? And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm just doing my thing. So it was a good camp. And then I remember having my meeting with Steve Hamilton and Jeff Chenoweth. They kind of just dropped a bomb on me a little bit and were like, hey, we'd like to like keep you to to the next round here. Like, we really like what you saw, what we saw. And they decided to keep me practicing as like a practice player. They didn't really promise me anything, but they said, you know, if you keep playing the way you're playing, like, you can stay throughout the entire year. I started actually getting put into games. It was a huge shell shock for me and my family. I don't think my mom expected to go home alone after camp. So that was pretty crazy.
Oh my gosh. Like, I do love that. I mean, it gets, I got hair stand up in the back of my neck right now, because like, that's the stuff is like, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to do, first of all, right? Like, it's hard to do to go to a camp, not be on a list even, let alone not being drafted, and to make a team, to make that much of an impact to those in charge to keep you is like, kudos, man. Like, that's super, super exciting. And haven't looked back since, you know, like 2 years in the league now, and a big piece of the puzzle there with Vancouver once you got traded. Like, what's the message there? I mean, I heard the message, but if you were to speak directly to kids right now that are, you know, wanting to be in the WHL or to make a team, and maybe they're not being watched or being, you know, recruited, let's say, you know, like, what's the message to them?
I would say find what you're good at and make it your identity a little bit. I was told, you know, I have a motor. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to lean into that. I'm going to make sure I'm able to have that type of motor throughout an entirety of the game. And I kind of just leaned into my work ethic a little bit. And, it kind of separated me from a lot of those players that were probably at the camp expecting to make it. And, I think that would be my biggest piece, is just kind of know what you're good at. Obviously try and expand your game, but you know, we're always trying to expand our game. So just be like, yeah, stick to what you're good at, know who you are as a player, and you'll end up where you should be.
Yeah. What great advice. Couple things I want to unpack there. So you said motor. I know what you mean by that, but I don't know if everybody out there would know what you mean by that. So what is the, define what the motor means?
Always going, right? I feel like, my past in sports in general kind of fed into that a lot. Basketball, track was a huge one. Cross country was a huge one for me. So I've kind of just developed like this stamina. And I mean, I'm already a fast guy. So, with my stamina and everything, you won't ever see me going 85%, 75%, 90%. That's just not, I don't know how to do that yet. Maybe I should slow my game down sometimes, but you're going to get what you're going to get from me right now. And that's just 100% as much as I can. So that's kind of what I mean by motor is, you know, you're not going to outwork me, and I'm going to get that freaking pop, you know what I mean? So
I love it. Yeah. No, I love it. And geez, I just talk with players about that so much. Like, there's very, very few players that can't elevate their compete level. Yeah, and it's such an interesting way to be noticed, and it's such a, I shouldn't say easy, because it's hard to do. Like, it's hard to play that way, and that's why maybe guys don't play it. But you don't know, you're not going to have the puck every shift, you know, you're not going to have a scoring chance every shift, but you can compete your ass off every shift, you know, like in those areas where you are around the puck and you're F1, mm-hmm. in those board battles, like on the forecheck, and that, as you're watching a game, as an evaluator, as a scout, as somebody who's a decision maker, that's noticed, right?
Oh yeah.
And do you, as an, I mean, in the broad scheme of things, as a team, do you need guys like that?
100%.
Yes, right? Like, yes, 100%. Because that elevates everybody else's effort. That elevates everybody else's compete level. It's one of those things that's super contagious. So the fact that you made it on that, and again, like, obviously you're more than that, but it's awesome for you to hear. Do you, to understand that and to know, you know, like, this is what I am, this is what I'm about, and this is what I offer. And I think for anyone out there listening who's a player, it is key to London's advice there, is to know what you're great at and to really, really bring that to the table. You know, I mean, that's a for sure. Was there any point in, so now you're there as a practice player, you start to get your way in the line. I mean, you played 61 games, you know, I think it's a 68 game season. So you know, you weren't sitting on the sidelines for too long. And once you established yourself, you were there. Was there any kind of aha moment or a breakthrough for you where it's like, you, you felt like you belonged, like you felt like you were a WHL player, or you just, you know, or was that not the case? So you were just trying to be there all year kind of deal?
Yeah, a little bit of that. I mean, it was a little easier, I guess, to feel not comfortable, but like kind of be like, okay, yeah, I'm here after like the trade deadline, I'd say. But, you know, I've kind of always felt like, you know, it's been tough to feel like I belong. Not like most of the players I've ever played with. You know, I'm just different. So it's always kind of been a thing. And, you know, I've never felt bothered by it ever. In fact, sometimes I embrace it and I know that I'm different, but I feel like I believe that I should be there. And to me, that's all that matters. So I didn't really try and focus on whether or not, you know, my teammates thought I should be there or what anyone else really thought. So, yeah, I knew I should have been there. That's kind of been my thing.
Good. I want to get into that feel different. I'm just going to, like, for me, why I asked that question is because, like, I never really felt that way until my first pro year, and really actually my first pro year when I got traded to Toronto. Like, I felt a part of the process because I was drafted by Florida. You know, I kind of knew that I was going to, you know, be in the AHL most likely if I didn't make the NHL. And then they called me up and I knew the veterans there and been a part of camps. And, you know, I just kind of felt like that was my trajectory and felt comfortable enough, not necessarily super comfortable on the ice in NHL games, but still comfortable on the ice to be like, okay, you know, like this is part of my plan, my journey. But then when I got traded and I was in Toronto, I just really didn't feel like I belonged all of a sudden. Like I was like, holy, I'm playing with Matt Sundin and Curtis Joseph and Ty Domi's my roommate. And, you know, Wendell Clark's my winger. And I, you know, never been in the city before. And it was just like, I felt like an outsider, you know, and I felt like kind of an imposter at times, even though I was, you know, obviously working hard and doing those things. But it's an interesting way to play the game, right? Like when you don't necessarily feel comfortable, and it could be something that helps you because you are maybe working that much harder, or it can be something that makes you feel alienated and you don't play to your best ability. I always felt that as I went on in my career, like the more new places that I went to, and yes, you become a veteran and you know, you have your own kind of swagger about you, the more experience you get, but the team environment really does matter when it comes to that, as far as like, you know, you saying you feel different, but it's different feeling different yet also being accepted. Right. Like, did you feel that Calgary did a good job of, you know, welcoming you in there? Were they a part of that transition for you?
Yeah, for the most part, I think like, yeah, a lot of, especially the older guys, they were really kind of the ones that, you know, showed that, yeah, you should be here. And like, you know, they appreciated my work ethic and they really let me know, like, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. And, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Just hearing that from like a guy like Tyson Galloway, who's, you know, he was a Blues prospect and now he's with the Calgary Flames as a prospect. So when I was, you know, obviously like 15, 16 years old, hearing that from him, it made me feel good. I was like, okay, great. It's good to know. And so I was able to play, you know, the way I knew I could play. And yeah, I think that helps a lot when you have guys on the team to, you know, talk to and ask questions and just, yeah, just feel a part of the community. So it was fun.
It's validating too, right? And I think there's a lesson there, and I know it is because you're an ambassador to the sport and I know you're a great teammate, but like having that type of feedback, knowing the impact that it had on you as a young man, like understanding now that you as a third year guy coming in the league, and even I remember you telling a story that it was a guy that just got traded there and you made sure that you were at the rink to welcome him to the team right late at night after practice. Like those types of gestures, those types of moves, right, is a piece of that acceptance, a piece of that team culture, something that you've experienced before. And now you can give to those that are coming in who are the young guys on campus.
For sure.
Yeah. And that's a big piece of the puzzle too. In London, I know we've spoke personally on that, but just kind of for the audience, like that idea of providing that type of a culture, that type of an atmosphere and environment for a team. Not everybody on the team was waiting there for that guy this year, correct?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Not everybody. So, and I'm not saying everybody should be, but the idea here is that there's some people do go to that next level because they understand that human piece, that they want this guy to feel comfortable. And if there's not any London Hoylets on the team, that's not a great team. right? Like you need guys that are going to do that. And so for everyone listening, it's like, don't underestimate the value of caring, right? And of being a good person, to recognizing those moments, because that goes a long way. I guarantee you that guy, whoever that was, remembers that gesture, remembers that moment, and is very, very appreciative of it. And now maybe he pays it forward when he has the opportunity to do it in the future. And I've heard that time and time again, like from the guys that I've interviewed and the stories that I've heard, is like, those are the things guys remember. Not their first shift in a new team or whatever, but they remember who did what, who invited them to dinner, right? Who took the time to introduce themselves. So I just wanted to congratulate you and let everyone else know that those pieces do mean a lot. Just take a short break from the episode to say thank you, not only to the listeners, but also to the sponsors. Not only the sponsors for my circle, the Up My Hockey circle, that help get the programs going, that help get the jerseys paid for the parents, to try and keep costs low, to help people come to events, but also to all the sponsors out there who have helped minor sports in whatever capacity, and especially if you've helped minor hockey in some capacity. We can't do it without you. We can't do it without the corporate dollars that are coming in. It's already an expensive enough game as it is, and everything that you do at the grassroots level, corporate sponsors out there, we thank you. So a couple shout outs to my sponsors, FH&P Lawyers here locally, helping with the jersey kits this year. It's a local law firm out of Kelowna, one of the partners' sons plays on my team, so big thank you for them to coming out and support, and also to Iron Ghost Construction, who not only is helping my spring team, but is also going to be backing my UMH 68 tournament as the major sponsor. I really wanted to get involved with somebody like-minded, somebody that was purpose-driven, that wanted to support not only the community, but also hockey and young players in general. And that is actually exactly what we have with Iron Ghost Construction. It's a Western-based construction company. The founder, Mr. McKechnie, has hockey in his roots. He was a Vernon Viper stick boy back in the day, and grew up playing, and wants to be involved. His son is a hockey player, and just really wants to be involved and give back. So love having them involved, and it's great to be involved with people who, you know, understand the sport and want to give back to a sport that has given them so much. So I can totally relate to that. If you are anyone in the construction business, in the oil patch, in forestry, or need a site built, Iron Ghost is somebody on the western side of Canada here that you should be looking at, especially if you're listening to this podcast and if you're a decision maker, because it's great to work with people in that network. And I'd love to be able to get Iron Ghost some type of a job from the association here without my hockey in the podcast. So more to follow with that, but thank you not only to my sponsors, but like I said, to everyone out there that is being involved. I really do think that probably goes underappreciated. And for you athletes out there that are old enough to be listening to this, and to understand it, that there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes for allowing you to play. And whether that's at a junior level or whether it's a minor hockey rep team level, there are people that are paying, you know, their hard-earned dollars into this to make it more accessible for you. So a super mature thing would be to seek out who those people are, who has been involved. A phone call or a letter or a card or just a thank you would be amazing. I think it is a good piece of gratitude training to have your athletes do that, if this is their mom or a dad, to go out there and to understand what it is that they're being thankful for, what it is that they're doing, what it allows them to, how it greatly, you know, increases their experience in the sport, and to recognize it and to say thanks. So here's my thanks, my recognition of gratitude to my sponsors and to those out there. Love what you do. Keep doing it. We couldn't do it without you. Now back to the conversation with London. I wanted to go back now. We talked about your scouting report from Elite Prospects, which to me, I just kind of like hit me in the face. So you were a kid that didn't necessarily know you, or maybe didn't expect to be in the WHL, right? Like you were going to a camp, you were undrafted, you weren't even listed, you had all these guys probably ahead of you on the depth chart, yet all of a sudden now you make the WHL. Now you're playing. And not only now are you playing, but now it's your NHL draft year and people are actually watching you for the greatest league in the world. Like that's a pretty big trend all of a sudden, right?
Crazy. Yeah, that was an exciting year. So I mean, you know, going to a new school now too, also just in Calgary, and playing in front of, you know, playing in the Saddle Dome in general, practicing even, was like insane. I mean, just seeing all those seats, like, how do you pack this thing out? And then don't even get me started about, like, you know, the big games, like when Bedard came packed, sold out. I was like, I felt like I was already there. I was already at the NHL level. It felt like that was a crazy, like, just feeling, and like you can feel like the screaming and rumbles just in your chest when you step on the ice. And it was like a lot. It was a lot to take in 1 year, especially. So I feel like I'm proud of the way I embraced that kind of challenge in terms of, you know, playing in front of that many people or playing against high level players like Bedard. And it was a crazy year. Crazy.
Yeah. So did you have like the bandwidth to, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I mean, yeah. So you're trying to be effective on the team. You're trying to just stay there, right? Like all these things. And yet there are people in there that are scouting you because it is your draft year. Like, were you aware of that, like that happening, like that whole thing going on and watching? Are you a guy that watches your reports or seeing if you're getting, you know, who's saying what?
I try to stay away from who's saying what a little bit. Cause you know, like you said, do I have the bandwidth? I was like so anxious, like all year. Yeah. Everything about it was just so overstimulating. I just didn't have really any time to process it. I'm trying to graduate. I'm trying to graduate like with good marks, and you know, also stay in the lineup. Also make sure I'm playing the best so that I can, you know, make an impression and feel like, you know, I should be here. It's like, it was a lot. And also being away from home for the first time was another thing. And so there was a lot of factors that probably didn't help with the stress levels, but I feel like I handled it the best I could. I feel like that's kind of how that went down.
Yeah, man, there is a lot. I mean, I try and talk about that, like the preparation for that. You can't really prepare for what you don't know. But with some mentorship and with some conversations and with some tools, like you can, in a sense too, right? Like, but there's massive transitions. Like you said, school is a huge one. Like the schedule that WHL team keeps, right? The pressures of staying in the lineup, the pressures of being scouted, but for the NHL, you know, like, maintaining your physical health, right? Like making sure that you're on top of your food and your eating. And it's like, there's a lot that goes on there, especially for a lot of kids. Well, vast majority, it's the first time that they're not with mom and dad, right? They're out of their own house. And now they're kind of, you know, taking care of themselves. So the fact that you're able to do that, it makes you grow up quick. I mean, it's the school of life for sure right there. Smacking you in the face, and then sometimes it gets pretty tough. Like, obviously it's not that you're always, things are going great. Sometimes you're fighting to stay in the lineup, maybe you're a healthy scratch, all these things are going on. And maybe we can start there, because that was like, so the start of your second year, you had a good first year, I think by all accounts, right? I mean, you got in the lineup, you ended up scoring double digits in goals, you pretty much had a spot. And then your second year comes around and things maybe don't get off the way you wanted it to get off. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit.
I got to camp, and this was like my first time being at camp as a returning player. So that was a little bit of a different feel. And I thought I was ready. I feel like I was ready. And I know they brought in a lot of young guys, and they, you know, they were probably, they had in mind that they wanted to rebuild this year. And I felt like I was really kind of just put on the back burner a little bit. I wasn't producing either. I feel like that kind of threw me off my game a little bit. Just and then also like the pressure of like, what if I never score again? Like kind of like everything like that. So it was very disappointing start to my year. I was like, well, I gotta get something going. So.
So you started off in the lineup. Like, were you in the lineup for opening day?
Yeah, opening day I was in the lineup for the first like month, and then it kind of started dropping off a lot. Like maybe every second game I was scratched.
So did your minutes start to go down first?
Oh yeah, yeah. My minutes started to go down, and I was, you know, sitting on the bench for maybe 7 minutes, 10 minutes at a time, and then going back out there and trying to stay up to pace. And And that, you know, that's difficult, but you know, you got to learn how to do that. So I took that as a challenge, and and then yeah, so just started being like, you know, show up to the rink and your name's not on the lineup sheet, so yeah, gotta go do your workouts and kind of just go back upstairs and watch the game, which was, you know, it was tough, especially as a second year guy who, you know, had a good first year. It was not easy.
All right. So maybe that's a good segue, like, to, so you're, again, expectations are everything. Second year guy, you feel you got the first year under your belt, you're showing up at camp, and I know you're a guy that didn't, you weren't comfortable, let's say, right? Like, it wasn't like you were taking things for granted. I'm sure, like, you did the work and you're ready to go, and things don't start off the way you want them to. Minutes start to go down. Now you're out of the lineup. Now you're starting to maybe question yourself, and maybe that's when I get an email from you, potentially. What was going through your head at that point? Like, what were you looking for? Was it chance that you found me, or like, how did that whole thing happen?
Completely by chance. I was starting to like implement like a meditation into my game, and so I'd look up on YouTube like pregame meditations, and so I was on the bus. And after one of the meditation videos were done, it kind of just kept going, and it went to the next video, and it was your podcast. So I was just listening to it. I was like, "What? Who is this guy? Like, what he just said, like, in this podcast? Like, I used that game, and, you know, I got my first point of the year." And I was like, wow, like, maybe I should try and reach out to him. And I remember just sitting in bed that night and being like, yeah, like, who knows? Maybe he'll answer. I was like, okay, I'll just ask him for, you know, a little bit of advice. And then you had brought up that, you know, you had a whole course. And I was like, oh, wow. So I remember telling you, like, I would love to. I really don't have the funds to. And you gave me the peak potential course for free so that I could kind of use it to my advantage and kind of salvage my year a lot, which I'm so thankful for. That probably changed, you know, the whole trajectory of my year. And yeah, it was just awesome.
Well, yeah. Thanks for bringing that. I didn't mean for you to bring that up, but yeah, like, London, for anyone listening, like, I don't know, like, how we project on social media or whatever the case may be, right? Like, I don't know how hard that was for London to reach out to me or what the second thoughts were. Maybe if he ever doubted that, maybe he should or he shouldn't, but he did. And I can't remember exactly the message. But I was like, I'm impressed. Anytime an athlete reaches out, anytime an athlete has one, the courage, I guess, to do it, two, the, let's call it the vulnerability to do it, right? Like, hey, I'm struggling right now, or, you know, I'm looking for this or looking for that. That tells me that this kid's driven. That tells me that he wants to be a player. And if you're a coach of any substance at all, that has to fire you up, because that's exactly who you want to help, right? So London, so when you did that, I was like, okay, so this kid obviously wants it. He's obviously in a tough spot. And so I did offer you like that little meeting, right? So we had a consultant. I don't think I've ever told you this. So to me, it's a little bit funny. Maybe it's not funny to you. I think it will be. But I didn't have a chance to look up who you were or what was going on, right? Like, I just knew that you played in the WHL. And I was like, okay, like, we'll have this meeting. And then when the camera came on, we're doing the Zoom call. And I was not expecting you to look the way you look, like, at all, right? Like, WHL player, I was thinking he's going to have white, he's going to be a mullet, you know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. And there you are with dreads, and I'm like, oh, London, how's it going? So, like, there was this internal, like, kind of shock for me, just because of, like, how, like, our expectations again, right? Like, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. And because we said we're going to talk about race a little bit. Obviously, that doesn't matter to me that what color you are. But how has that ever been, like, something that you've recognized as being helpful, or has hurt you, or like the whole piece of being a minority in a game that's predominantly white?
I think it's just always been kind of a, you know, just to be aware of. So I've always kind of looked out for that. My dad played. It was a bit, way different time back then. So he was playing in the MJHL, and he eventually quit. Because it was just too much. And so, you know, him having kids and his kids wanting to play hockey was, I think, a little strange for him and a little hard for him to watch. But he was like, very supportive, and he just wanted us to know, like, just to look out for it. So if you ever see anything or hear anything, like, just let him know. And so, no, thankfully, when I was younger, I didn't hear anything. I mean, it was like, I would, you know, kids don't know how to be racist or discriminatory. I mean, just growing up, it was all normal. I just knew I looked different. So it wasn't anything like that. I mean, I met a lot of my best friends. But I feel like as I got older and older, and as I keep, you know, getting older, and you start to see a little, differences, like, in the way people, you know, talk to you. Maybe like you don't really, or they don't expect you to know as much about, you know, hockey as they think you do. And they kind of talk to you like, yeah, you should listen to me because clearly you don't know what you're doing. And so it's a lot of that kind of just backhanded compliments and stuff like that. So, you know, you kind of just shove it aside because, you know, it's kind of been the thing. So, it's never deterred me from anything. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely getting better. I feel like we're actually starting to acknowledge it a lot more these days, but it's not gone for sure yet until, you know, we really push it.
How, is there anything, and I'm not asking you to have any of the solutions, but like, if there is a problem, whatever that problem is, like, is there a solution that you see, or is there a way forward to help make things better?
You have a support system with all every team you're on, right? So I would say first thing is tell your coach, let him know. And, the adults, and, you know, it's their job to, you know, take action when action is needed. I know some people, you know, it's hard because some people think maybe it's annoying that, you know, we're here causing a ruckus and, you know, it's like, they almost treat us like you're kind of lucky to play the sport, which I am. Like, we're all lucky to play the sport, but it doesn't make me any different than you. Right. So, it's always been like, you're kind of lucky to be here. That's kind of how it felt. So, I feel like, just tell somebody if, you know, something's said just tell somebody.
Do you think, I think that's super important. Yeah. I mean, like, stand up, right? Have the courage to stand up. Hopefully somebody around you has the courage to stand up. If anyone hears it, I mean, I think that's the most important piece, right? Mm-hmm. Like that. I mean, you shouldn't have to say anything, to be quite honest. Like, hopefully anyone else that's there within earshot, someone's going to say something to that person, whatever that's having the issue. When we talk about these things, and we're talking about through this lens of hockey right now, and just want your opinion on this. Do you think, like, if there is something that happens, let's say in a hockey environment, do you feel that it's a hockey issue, or is that still a social issue that is now just a piece of hockey?
I'd say it has to be like a social issue still. I feel like, you know, it's not every hockey player, right? It's not every person in the world, right? It's a social issue, like just the way either they grew up or what they've been taught, or what they've seen on TV or whatever. So I don't think it's like necessarily a hockey issue. I feel like hockey's doing a much better job than they did when my dad played. So like, that's something I can appreciate. There's been a lot of awareness this year and last year even towards all of that. But I feel like, you know, socially, like even just, I know we're in Canada, but like even in like America and stuff, you see it's crazy stuff happening all the time. So I'd say it's more of a social issue.
Right. And I just say that just because like it's I try to be as honest as we can with every conversation we have. Right. Mm-hmm. So if there is issues that are hockey related issues, like that would be specific to hockey, then yes, definitely hockey needs to do something about that. My experience of hearing it, you know, I mean, from a third party seeing it, to me, it's just like people, as to your point, that have been, that have that as part of their construct. And whether you meet them on the sidewalk or whether you meet them in a dressing room, the experience for you, I would think would be likely similar, right? Yeah. But the fact that hockey is around it now, it doesn't make it necessarily that hockey is doing anything wrong. It's just society needs to be doing better, I think, in general. And I think it seems to me like it is getting better. And I hope that your experience is, continues to get better, because that's definitely obviously the way we want it to be. Take a quick break from the conversation with London just to remind everyone out there that Up My Hockey can come to an association, an academy, or a team near you for the 2024-25 season. I've been having many conversations. The fall looks like it's going to be fully booked. But by all means, I will throw out the feelers there for anyone else that thinks they want to be involved. This is where I think Up My Hockey can make the most impact for the most amount of players, which is exactly why I am doing what I'm doing. I'm obviously all in this department, this mindset training, the personal development aspect of being your best hockey player is absolutely crucial in this day and age. And if I can get involved with associations or academies or teams where these players can grow with Up My Hockey programming throughout their time with that association, now we are talking, because this is something that builds. This isn't a one and done, read a book, have an hour workshop, and think that it's all figured out. This is something that you can learn from 13, 14, 15. Go through the levels, the U13, U15, U17, U18 levels. And as you graduate a program, you would step into a new program with Up My Hockey. That is the idea. That is the offer. That is the service. So yes, we do one teams only, and we've been very successful with that. So if you are a coach or a general manager or, you know, somebody that is a decision maker for a team, a competitive team, and you want to have a difference, make a difference next year in your season and start off the season with some team building 2.0 that's going to get your team off on the right foot, then by all means, we definitely do that. But if you are part of a bigger thing, if you are a rep team in an association somewhere, whether that be in Canada or the United States, and you think, hey, this is something that we definitely need, we should have this for our competitive program, this will give us a competitive advantage, and you want Up My Hockey to be a part of all of those teams and have your son or daughter be able to take in the benefits of that, then by all means, reach out. Let me know that you're interested, and that is something that I would be happy to get in a conversation about, okay? So, yes, upmyhockey.com, that's a contact form on the website, www.upmyhockey.com. There's a contact form there, or my direct email is jason@upmyhockey.com if you want to get a hold of me and discuss what mindset training might look like for your team or for your academy. Now, let's get back to the conversation with London Hoylett. You talked about your father there. Maybe it's a good time to chat about him a little bit and the impact that he had. And he's not with us anymore, and I don't know anything to do with that story, but I know he had a big impact to you in a few of the stories that you have told me. So maybe we should talk about Dad.
So my dad, he was born in England. His parents are Jamaican, so that's what I am. I'm Jamaican. And they moved to Selkirk, Manitoba. Kind of the middle of nowhere, but he started kind of playing hockey, because that's what kids in Selkirk did back then, especially. And so we started playing hockey, and eventually, made it to the MJHL. And, once he got to that higher level, not so friendly, he decided to, play for the college basketball team, U of M. So he started playing college basketball. I remember the stories he'd tell us of people going just to warm up, just to watch him dunk. And then they'd leave when the game starts. And then I know sometime after that, while he's still in university, the CFL coach, or the Bison's coach, I guess, had asked him if he wanted to play football for them. So he said yes, and then he quit basketball and then goes to play for the CFL and goes play for the Bombers. And he played there for a few years, and then, he had us, and just telling us all those stories, we're like, wow, we can literally do whatever we want, apparently. So, we tried every sport under the book. Basketball was big for me. That was kind of what I was most into, beginning of my life. My brother was hockey. My sister's still playing basketball, and she's better than me by quite a long shot now. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, I think just sports in general was pushed so heavily. And but like, you know, then again, if you're gonna play it, you better work your ass off.
Yeah,
we're not busting our butts here with three kids to just watch you be lazy. So, you know, if you're gonna do it, you gotta do it 100%. That's kind of the way he operated. And so, yeah, that's kind of how our upbringing was. You know, I have a little sister, Mia, and an older brother, Jalen. And so, yeah, it was a lot of sports, a lot of running around for my parents. And yeah, eventually, everyone kind of stuck to one sport. My sister was, you know, basketball. I was hockey, and my brother was hockey as well. Yeah. And that was when, you know, my parents started having a little more trouble, problems. I was in my first AAA tryouts, and my dad, I guess, had depression. He had gone into depression, so he started drinking pretty heavily, and then I remember just going to like him coming at my games, and you know, he was always a big guy, like biggest guy in the room, always. Obviously, football player, right? He's so yeah. So he was always huge. And I just remember seeing him like pretty much just deteriorate, like just so skinny. And it was like hard to watch him from playing, trying to make a team, AAA team, my first AAA team ever, and just seeing him in the stands, like that doesn't even look like the guy that's been watching me for all these years. And it was kind of, yeah, it was heartbreaking. Yeah, it was a really tough time. My dad eventually, like, we all moved out, and my dad was living in Charleswood, and I was living in St. James or in Winnipeg or Westwood. And, you know, we'd see him here and there. And I remember coming back from my first year of RHA, the Rink Hockey Academy. I was coming back from a trip, and it had just been my 15th birthday. And I was going to go see all my family, and my mom picked me up, and, you know, we dropped my buddy off at his place. And then she said that, you know, there are police at our house, and I told them I had to go get you. And we were just like, why the hell are there police at our door? And I remember getting that news, and it was just probably like, obviously the worst news you can ever hear. So that was really tough, because it was also my draft year at that point too. So that kind of just, you know, I didn't want to miss that much hockey. I think we were going back to Notre Dame to play Notre Dame. Yeah. Right after that, like that weekend. And you know, I said, you know, I'm going. So I went and I played, and you know, all the boys, you know, they saved me, like, seriously. I mean, I don't know if I could have just stayed at home, and I don't know what I would have done. The only thing I really knew was to just go play hockey, and you know, my teammates were just awesome. It was just awesome. So,
what a great
it was a crazy year.
Well, it's tough, man. So this larger than life, you know, man, dad, right? The superhero kind of, right? And then to see that's tough for anyone at any age. I couldn't imagine being your age and still having to have the season. And I guess I'm grateful for you that you had hockey, and I'm sure, you know, you are as well, to have that memory as be a good one. What's your favorite memory of dad?
He was really into Bob Marley. So me and him we had like a patio, and he'd be like cooking something, like barbecuing. He was a good cook, and I would just be playing basketball and showing him the new dunk I just learned on the tiny net. And I feel like just that one is a core memory for me, as it is for like pretty much everyone else in my family. Everybody just, you know, we're all going to get matching tattoos with like Bob Marley songs on it. And it's going to be funny. But yeah, that's kind of just him. He's just so fun all the time. So I feel like that was a huge memory for me.
What was the best way to make dad proud?
I feel like just, you know, do what he instilled in me, which is, you know, work hard, leave it all out there. He used to always say, like, before, when I was young, when I was playing, he said, if you work hard, you'll get a gumball after the game. So I'd always come off the ice like, did I work hard? And he's like, yeah. And so I got a gumball, and I feel like I'm just chasing that gumball still. And yeah, I feel like that's a big thing for me.
Oh man, yeah, that's sounds like there's a lot of goodness in him, a lot of things to look up to, and I'm sure that you're looking on those every day and still trying to make them proud. I know fathers are a big influence, and it sounds like you had a superhero of a dad, so that's pretty cool. As far as the season, if we get back to the season and us having our time and you went through this program, which by the way is the Peak Potential Mindset Program is what London's talking about. It's the mindset training that I call it for players. And so London, as to remind you, he's in a spot now where, you know, he's in a position where he reaches out to somebody he's never heard before, someone that he listened to on a YouTube short or a reel, and he ends up getting inside this course. Now talk maybe not necessarily what's in the course, but how did it help you and what were the results of that?
It, it gave you all the tools, everything you ever needed to like focus on and highlight things like in your mental side of the game. So, I mean, even outside of that, it was, how many days a week was it? Like three, five?
Monday to Friday.
Yeah. So, yeah. Even just like to myself, I was like, hey, well, I'm not going to miss a day. Even just being there and doing it every single morning, that already kind of got me into like a, yeah, we're doing this mindset. Like right. we're sticking to it. And then, just going through the course every day, I was able to go to practice and, you know, I put it on again, like on the radio on my car, and I could focus on it that day. And like, whatever you were talking about, I'd focus on that day and practice those skills. And it definitely made a huge difference, even in the way I just, like, presented myself, like, at the rink. You know, I kind of focused on, you know, the brighter side of things. It gave me something to be excited about. And I think, you know, even now that I'm not on that team, it still shows up on the team I'm at. Like, I'll be able to have that forever. So the skills you'll learn and the peak potential will get you farther than I feel like people would think. Like, the mental side of hockey is, like, the least practiced side of hockey that there is. So to be able to get a chance to practice those things and learn, it was a game changer, I'd say.
Oh, that's great to hear. I mean, it made that much of an impact. And the thing is, I don't know exactly what it was, and we don't have to get into the idea, but, like, just for those listening, so, you know, being out of the lineup, trying – When you do get in the lineup, so let's just talk a little bit about what that presents like, right? And you've seen it, like, for players, like, that can present in a lot of ways. It can present as frustrated when players get to the rink. It can present as sad. It can present angry. There's a lot of ways that you can show up because there is emotions that are involved in that, right? Like, you're not chosen to be in the lineup now. How does that affect your practice? How does that affect you with your teammates? How does that affect your approach when you're not at the rink, right? Are you going to bed at the right time? Are you buying in? Like, what are you doing in those aspects? And then if we even cut that and say, okay, now you're in the lineup and now you're not getting many minutes, we need to really have a mindset that allows us to try and be brave and bold when we're on the ice, right? And to play our best so we can get more minutes. Like, there's a lot of non-hockey related discussions in that, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like, being able to reframe a lot of things and a lot of my thinking and kind of flip it into all right, for every single time you're out on this ice, you're gonna play with courage, or you're gonna play, you know, careless or free, I guess, more is the word. And so kind of getting rid of that fear of failure, that was a big one, was the fear of making mistakes. The peak potential process kind of gave me the tools to flip that and turn it into, like, well, I'm going to go out and play with courage. And it did help me for sure.
Right. Yeah. It was fun to be a part of that and just to see you kind of work your way back in the lineup, to see you end up getting you know, getting your goal, the teddy bear toss game was awesome. And then the trade, like, so we talked a little bit about that too. Like the trade is that's a big deal, right? Getting traded. And again, like there's a hockey player that gets traded, but there's also a human being attached to that hockey player that also gets traded. Right. Yeah. So all those skills come over to a new team and a new dressing room. But then there's a person that is having to change their life, that's going to have to adapt to new teammates, that's going to have to fit in, figure out all the things that are required of them, and you know, and hopefully earn the trust of this new coach. You mentioned that you know, that our work together was pretty invaluable through that process as well.
Yeah, for sure. Even just to be able to like ask questions about like, you know, how was your experience getting traded? Because you know, I didn't know how to go about it really. Right. And your advice was awesome. I got there and all the boys introduced themselves to me, which was awesome. And I felt like I belonged almost right off the jump. And they made that really easy for me. Being I was playing a lot more there than I had played my entire career. So that kind of was like, all right, now's your time. Go play with courage. Play with courage. So I was really trying to kind of save my year almost. And I was able to kind of bounce back from, you know, the start that we might have had. And, you know, it's in the past, but I definitely learned from it. And that's not happening again.
Right.
And that's kind of going to be, you know, my mindset, especially this off season, is I'm going to be ready, but I'm going to be a way better player and just a more complete player. So. Yeah,
good for you, man. Like, what a season, hey? Like, all those, like, all the ups and downs, and then to be traded to get more ice to end up in a playoff series. Like, super, super cool. And one of the things I'll reiterate that I did say to London, and I don't know if this is exactly what he was referring to, but in some of our discussions, and it does apply to anyone listening, like, anytime you go to a new team, and whether that means a trade or whether that means you're going to into camp and it's a new environment, you can be whoever it is you want to be. And I think that, like, for me, like, that's like, you are setting that standard and you are creating your brand is one of the things that I call it sometimes, right? Like, who is London Hoylett, right? Like, what are you? What are you about? What is your identity? You know, we talked about that as a hockey player, right? Being a motor guy, but what does that look like in the locker room, right? What does that look like for your practice habits? What does it look like for the way you carry yourself away from the rink? And it's really, I think it's super empowering. Because you have a clearer picture of what you are, what you stand for, and being really unapologetic and being kind of non-negotiable about those things and being consistent with them from there on out. It's like, it really is like, it can be a new life and it can be a new chance. Right. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know if you took that and ran with it, but I do recommend that to anyone. Yes, like when you're going in there is like, just be the best version of you and understand what that is, right? Because we all have strengths, we all have weaknesses, and there's things that we can change. I think we're always a work in progress. But if you have a really clear understanding of what that is, like what the brand is, the person is that's walking into that room, I think that's a really structured way to start and probably gives you the best chance for success moving forward.
Yeah, first 100%. And I mean, that even just like having that, you say that kind of just gave me so much like internal freedom. And I just pretty much decided like, I'm going to be a player that's going to be hard to take out of the lineup. I'm going to be reliable. I'm going to work hard every shift and I'm going to play the way I know I can play. And that kind of carried throughout the season and only got better really. So that's awesome. Yeah, that was good.
So you mentioned about next year. So we're going to be hitting your third year here in the league, 19-year-old year. So 2 years of eligibility left. Yeah. Where are London Hoylett's sight just in the big picture? Let's say the 5-year runway. Are you wanting to be paid to be a hockey player at some point?
100%. That would be nice. I feel like obviously this year is an important year. I want to go out this year and make a huge impact and. You know, whether or not that leads to a camp invite or something, I want to be able to be a 20 in the league. That's kind of more of my goal. I feel like it's more realistic for me. And then, you know, it's, obviously I'm going to be trying to get as good as I can get. Hopefully I could crack a roster spot or an invite even by my 20 year. And whether that's AHL or hopefully, I mean, NHL would be cool. So I feel like that's kind of my goals right now, and that's what I'm working to. Yeah, I mean, I had a billet brother my first year in Calgary named Zach Funk. Sure you've heard of that guy. That guy now. Yeah. I remember he got traded from our team, but me and him still kind of kept in touch a little bit, and just watching like him year to year was just completely different every year. Like he was really improving, like at like group like crazy amounts, and so he cracked the spot, or at least a prospect signing with Capitals. So
yeah, with Washington. He's from Vernon, actually.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's great. Yeah. Nice guy. Super nice guy. So yeah.
Yeah. Scored 60 this year. Yeah. What a crazy season.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's yeah. Fantastic. And so when you, cause this is the time of year it is, so your season's done. Like how do you craft what it is you're going to try and accomplish here in the next 4 months to be ready and to be that better player? What is your plan look like?
This year I want to gain a little bit of weight, muscle mass. I'm 190. So not bad, but if I get to like 200 and be stronger, a little bit stronger on my feet, I feel like it'll make guys think a little twice about maybe playing the body on me that much, and being able to protect myself, but then also being able to be confidently, as much of an energy guy as I am, right, going into those corners, and I can go into them with a lot more confidence, knowing that I'm gonna run through this guy. And I feel like a lot of it would also be, my stick handling. This year, second half of the year, especially, you gave me that freedom to, just be the player I want to be. And, I grew up with, I was known as like a skill guy a little bit. So, it's not that I didn't have any skill, but it was more of the mental block to allow myself to feel comfortable just like, performing those moves and getting around guys. And that was... That was something I was working on pretty much all this year. Was just giving myself the permission. And so this year I'm gonna work really hard at it so that I feel more comfortable giving myself permission and use my skill too, and put my work ethic into play and pretty much just become the player and I can be. Also my speed, my skating. It's pretty much everything I want to improve on, but I've got a very busy schedule this summer, so we're gonna be getting to work.
I believe it. How's the communication with the coaching staff there? Like, are they a part of the off-season plan and what they see in you, what they believe you to be able to become, and how you're gonna do that?
Yeah. So they were very happy with my exit meeting. We had our trainer give me a bunch of tips for this off-season. He said he'd like me to be a little heavier too, so that's something I'm going to work on. And our skills coach actually in Vancouver was my skills coach in the Rink Hockey Academy, and he still works there. So in the summers he works there, so me and him are going to do some one-on-one skates. He's Seth Jarvis's brother actually. He's a great skills coach. So working with him is going to be nice. The coaches, they gave me a lot of things to work on as well. Like head coach Manny, he said, if I could keep my motor going for even longer shifts, I feel like I was getting a little bit, more tired by, the end of my shift. And, if I was able to do that for, a longer period of time, obviously that'd be ideal. So I'm going to work on my stamina a lot and just try and do what they said. So
good.
Hopefully.
That's a good part. I mean, it's for everyone out there. I mean, it's good. It is good to have, your own idea of a plan, but it's also great to collaborate, right? What do other people see and what do they think? And, and to build a plan together to become the most complete player you can be. So it sounds like you're going to be busy at work. And for those listening at home, London's got a pretty cool story. We won't spend a ton of time on it, but I do want to mention it, that he is also Ty Kiddo in the music space and records and has some great songs and has some videos. And so I know that, I don't know how much of that takes up as far as being creative and of your time, but obviously it must be a great creative outlet for you to probably take your mind maybe off the game at some times and gives you a little bit of reprieve there.
Yeah, for sure. I just got a new keyboard, sort of savvy, but I got a new keyboard now and writing a lot of music. But whenever I get a chance to just chill out, I'll do this. So it's not a lot of just sitting around watching TV, which is, you know, the way, you know, I like it. It's nice. It's fun. It's good to be home also in like the comfort of my own home. Again, not making music in my built family's house for disrupting everybody. So it's nice to be back and with all my music stuff, and it's, you know, it's a fun thing to do away from, you know, the ring. So
great. Well, we'll wrap it up. I just wanted to, I mean, I know I've told you before, but, you know, you're an awesome example in a lot of ways. And I think that you're doing yourself justice. You're doing the game justice. I think you're giving back to the game in great ways, and you're an awesome ambassador. And Dad would definitely be proud, and I'm happy to be working with you, partner. One of the things I didn't mention, we have this group program called the Inner Circle, where I meet with graduates of the Peak Potential project that, you know, want to continue on working together. And it's a collaborative, right? Like, I mean, I'm definitely hosting it, but the players are involved as well in supporting each other. And London, you've been an absolute awesome addition in there. And I know a lot of the younger guys that are in the group look up to you, and having that perspective and being able to give back is something that I want you to continue to embrace, right?
Like, yeah, for sure. Thank you.
That's a big piece of it. So thank you for being you. Thank you for being a great example. And thank you for taking the time today to share your story with us.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
All right. Thank you for sticking around to the end of the conversation with London. London is a fantastic dude. I'm just an awesome man, super talented in so many ways. And as we talked about in that conversation, his dedication, his perseverance, his commitment, his motor, as we talked about, are all distinguishing factors that make London, London. And that piece of what London is going to not only help him, and already has as a hockey player, but that's going to help him in whatever it is he decides to do with his life, whether that be in his 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And that is one thing that I can definitely relate to him, is that once you figure out kind of your own secret sauce and what makes you grow, what makes you find life interesting, and what drives you, like, that doesn't change. Like, whether it's me doing this podcast, me helping athletes, or whether it was me as a hockey player, or me even in the hotel industry, there was just a curiosity and a drive and a dedication for what I was doing that was just more a part of who I was than it is what I was doing. And I totally see that in London, and he's building that type of a foundation within him right now that obviously started before he started working with me. It was there with him. It was an identifying feature. It was something that he took pride in. But the beauty of it is that we can always add, right? We can always even increase our standards. And that was one of the things that we talked about, London and I, when he was trying to get back in the lineup. It was like, he was a guy, he wasn't pouting, he wasn't not working, but could he even add more? Could he even add more of that element? Could he get there a little bit earlier? Could he show the coach that this was something that he was committed to, that he wasn't going away, that he was willing to get better every day, even though he wasn't in the lineup, and be that good example and be that good teammate? And he did. He turned up the volume. He ended up working his way through that, working his way into the lineup, working his way into a guy that was valued by another organization, was able to get traded. And then he stepped into that organization and he did it again. He had his standard for what he was about, what he was going to commit to, what he was going to show. And this is going to continue to grow. And that's the type of piece when I speak about mindset, it's such a big word because it means so many things. Automatically people think about probably visualization, and we think about, you know, like the mental approach to recovery from mistakes and these types of things. But I believe mindset is also a choice when it comes to our personal traits and our characteristics of how we want to show up, understanding who we are as people, understanding what our strengths are, what maybe our character weaknesses are, and being able to look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm willing to either increase this, I'm willing to practice this, I'm willing to go to bat to ensure that I'm not going to get in my own way when it comes to this. I'm going to continually try to find the best version of myself in order to chase my goals and dreams. And that's powerful. That's really powerful. I mean, London's essentially in the league because of those personal traits. The fact that he also happens to be a really darn good hockey player is also a bonus. But you do not show up as an undrafted, unlisted 17-year-old to the WHL and make a hockey team unless you are massively driven, unless you are willing to outwork, outperform, and be more dedicated than somebody else. Now, these are skills that people don't necessarily think about. And that's why I think it was such an awesome time to be able to have a conversation with London, is because for many of you players listening out there, that is where your focus should be, on the personal intangibles that you can increase, the standards that you can change, the things that you can evolve into that are going to help you become as much of a hockey player as who your power skating coach is. So, London, thank you so much for being so vulnerable. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for listening to me and to London. And I hope you got a lot out of it. I know I really enjoyed that conversation. And until next time, make sure you play hard and keep your head up.